Welcome to Sober.Coffee, a weekly coffee chat sharing experience, strength, and hope for anyone on the sober road to recovery. You can download Sober.Coffee weekly on all podcast platforms and check us out on Instagram at Sober.Coffee Podcast and on Twitter at Sober Coffee Pod. To learn more about us and to help support these sessions, visit online at Sober.Coffee. Here are your hosts, two guys on their own path of recovery, Mike and Glenn. Let's join them at the coffee shop.
Stand corrected. We have three guys on a path to recovery, but we'll get to that in a minute. Good morning, Glenn. How you doing, man?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing, Mikey?
I'm doing just dandy, actually. Really just dandy. We've had a couple of good weeks around here at the coffee shop. Had some good guests. And
yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, the way I equate to a coffee shop, and I was just sharing that I'm a little light today. I feel myself pacing what I'm drinking. I should have brought the bigger...
A bigger cup?
Yeah, a bigger cup. 24 ounces, that's not going to do it today. But, you know, part of, you know, our time in here in the coffee shop is, you know, it's like we share life experiences. Like we did a recent check-in, right? We're just chatting about stuff that's going on in our life,
right?
So I would equate that to just a regular cup of coffee.
Right.
But then sometimes we get that cup of coffee and we put three espresso shots in it. Meat in the coffee shop. And that's how I'm kind of looking forward to today. And just a great opportunity to connect with a third person. I'll let you do the proper intro, but excited.
Yeah, super excited to have with us. We'll be all official here at first, but then we'll lighten up a little bit in a minute. But Dr. Jeffrey Hurton joined us. Good afternoon. Good doctor. How are you?
Doctor.
Fine, thank you.
Yeah.
For me, it's good morning.
good morning. Yeah, it's soup. So here, just truth be told, and our listeners know if they pay attention, we record early on Saturday mornings here
6 a.m.
in Chicago.
Chicagoland, yeah.
Okay, now, take that into California time. What time is it?
4 a.m.
Good morning, Dr. Burton.
Good morning.
It's like Dr. Hurton is getting up awful early to be with us this morning, so, or he hasn't gone to bed yet, one of the two.
No, he just got up.
All right, well, we really appreciate you being with us. Jeff, you authored a book, and I love it. It's called The Sobering Truth. I read it and reread it in preparation for... I read it in preparation for this coffee session, but I reread it because I didn't feel I did it justice the first time through. And I came to really appreciate it's a read, you know. It's 300-plus pages, but I love the style, and I love the connection to the reality of what is happening with the world of alcohol right now. And I just love the truth of the book, to steal the term. It's again called The Sobering Truth, and really opened my eyes. What made you write the book? I guess it was no doubt a big task. What was the kind of the, where you said, I've got to write a book on this? Was your flip point?
I'm so grateful for my sobriety. And I, as a physician, I know so much about the ins and outs and chemistry and biochemistry and physiology of alcohol and how it damages the body and every part of the body, that I really wanted to share that with other people, especially people that are what I was, a high-functioning alcoholic.
Right. And I love that because I really consider myself a high-functioning alcoholic as well.
So why don't we do this? Why don't we define that for folks? Because, yeah. I mean, we have some, I mean, you know, a lot of times we use terms and we have a lot of sober, curious people that listen to us that are just kind of, that this might be their first, second, or third foray into touching, you know.
Right. Good
sobriety.
Point.
So what's a high-functioning alcoholic?
Well, I'll start. I mean, I kept a job. I'd go through a couple of them, but I was always employed, employable. I could present well in an interview, and I could function well at a task. I had a car, you know. So I guess if I...
So it's not under the bridge.
I'm not under the bridge guy. So I'm so I'm actually functioning, right. And so there... I kind of wore it as a badge of honor that, hey, I'm an HFA, I'm a high functioner. you know, I've got my life together. It looks pretty good on a brochure until the very end. And then I was doing stupid, sloppy stuff, but never in society. Not, they didn't see me stagger to the bed, right? So I still consider that HFA or high functioning alcoholic. How about for you, Jeff? About the same way? I mean,
Very similar. I drank every day, but I was absolutely masterful at keeping my blood alcohol at a level where I was really feeling good, mellow, but not sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
No one in my social group knew that I was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. I mean, they knew I drank, but mm-hmm. they didn't realize that I had that sweet spot every single day, drank every single day. And I was a beer drinker.
Mm-hmm.
And I would start on the way home from work, and I would have a couple, and then I might have another one that evening. And I would just stay in that sweet spot where I was feeling very, very good. And then my life kind of fell apart, and I realized, you know, it came to me that I had been drinking consistently on a daily basis for like 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I quit.
Yeah.
And then having quit, it took me a while to feel better about that. And then I thought, you know, I gotta do some research and find out exactly what that stuff was doing to me.
Yeah, right.
So what was that point in time? Was it an experience? Was it a series of experiences that caused you to realize, hey, I need to stop?
I had done a 50 mile, I've done 250 miles of horseback riding in Death Valley. This was Christmas time, and we rode 50 miles a day every other day. It's a sport called endurance riding.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the last day, they have a big party, and I had got my horse cleaned up, and I had a couple beers, and I went to the party, and there was a young kid who was just really being obnoxious at the end of the table where we were sitting, and we were trying to have a conversation, and he just kept, you know, making a lot of noise.
Banging the chairs and, right, yeah.
And
right.
Banging the table. And so I just went over, stood behind him, and I put my hand down on his neck, shoulder, and said, you boys have to go somewhere else. And he tried to stand up, and I put him back down in his chair. And when I did, I fairly significantly bruised his neck and didn't realize it till later on when his mother brought him over to me and said, what did you do to my son?
Mm.
And it was a very public, not for the whole group, but for enough people that it was a very public awareness of my problem. And I was ashamed. And I said, how in the world could I possibly do that? I hurt a kid like that. And then
didn't she call you a drunk, though? Say that he was assaulted by a drunk?
Right.
Yeah.
And this is a small...
But yeah, you only had several beers.
I had probably three, yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Yep. And...
But it was such a public shaming. And then that, you know, I had to ask myself, what was that all about? And I'd been lying to myself for 30 years that I was addicted to alcohol. And that it made me, at times, it made me mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And lose my self-control.
Right.
So a lot of times I equate, you know, I always look at my own story, and I would drink a handle or two handles a day. And I mean, when I heard the 10 handles clanking in the trash at the end of the week, right? Right. I mean, you know, I wouldn't think that, you know, three beers would remind me. I met this guy in rehab, and he was an older gentleman, and he said, well, my daughter thinks I have a drinking problem. I'm like, well, do you? He goes, well, I don't know. And I said, well, how much you drink? He said, I drink, you know, 3 to 4 beers a day. And in my mind, I'm like, that's not a lot. But for folks, and Jeff, the story you're sharing, 3 to 4 beers is a lot.
Right. Well, here's my 2 cents. My 2 cents is what I've come to realize is everybody hits that point, and you know, and everyone's story is different, and everybody's consumption is different. But there is a cross, and I know that that you the book relies a lot on statistics and facts and figures, right? And but it's the real deal that, you know, 5 to 10% of the people, I think your book quotes, but I think that number might even be a little bit higher, have a problem with drinking. And it the problem is a personal problem. It you hit a point, your own access point, where you feel you've crossed over some kind of line that it's tough to come back from. You know, I know people in my life, and I know people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that crossed over a different barrier. It doesn't matter. They crossed their barrier. They crossed their barrier of pain, and that's when they came to the determination. And I love how your book peppers in so much good stuff. And if you could tell, I'm highly recommending it because it tells your story in there, but it also peppers in other stories of different people's points of pain and where maybe they crossed that line and they were never able to come back. Literally, physically, they were dead because they allowed to cross over that point of pain and didn't catch themselves in time to save themselves, right?
Absolutely. And the thing is that for some people it was physical, and for other people it was mental, and for a lot of people it was a cancer or a osteoporosis, right? Or a
GERD or immune system, right?
Having a fetal alcohol baby,
right?
That woke them up to the fact that the alcohol is the curse of our society,
right? Yeah, absolutely. But yet so acceptable. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah.
If I told people that I was on a call this week, and somebody said, "Oh, you know, your company should you know, part of their story should be that they give to a sober living community or to Alcoholics Anonymous." I'm like, "No, people, it has a stigma. There is a stigma to an alcoholic, but." Even with that stigma, alcohol is still so socially acceptable that it's omnipresent in advertising. It's omnipresent in events. I go to little kids' one-year-old birthday parties, and the real focus is on the bar table, not the present pile. It's like crazy. It's like your kid's one, and you're all getting blasted. What up?
Right. It's just it's so socially acceptable, Mike. It's really sad, and people don't even realize that they're drinking a substance that causes cancer in about every organ in the body,
right?
And that all these other problems that occur. You know, it's a poison. Alcohol is a poison.
It's a poison.
Kills cells.
Yeah,
and
right.
You know about the liver. It kills liver cells.
Yep.
And after you killed enough liver cells, the liver can't reorganize, and you get cirrhosis, and you end up turning yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And once you do that, you're going to either die or you're going to have a liver transplant.
Right.
And, you know, it all started with that little molecule of ethyl alcohol.
Right. And I know beer drinkers have died of cirrhosis of the liver.
Yeah.
You know, they've got beer drinkers. They didn't have a handle. They were just drinking beer. And
right.
Their poor little liver, because what I learned in your book is your poor little liver can only process about, what is it, you said an ounce?
Per hour, right?
Per hour.
Yep.
And when you're when you're drinking two beers an hour, come on, do the math, people. The hose isn't big enough to get the fluids through. You know, it just doesn't make sense. It's not happening. And that's what one of the things that your book pointed out to me.
So question, what MD, first of all, what type of doctor are you?
I'm a dermatologist.
Okay.
But I was trained in internal medicine as well, so I have that background.
So you got alcohol really messes up the internal part.
Every single organ in the body, you can't even, it's just hard to imagine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just amazing. In fact, I'm surprised with the amount of alcohol that I drink that I haven't had more physical health issues.
That's how resilient the body is, but right. But there's a point for everybody where that breaks down.
Right.
No, absolutely, and with different people, it's different, right? So my first rehab, I met this Dr. Kevin McCauley. He's out in L.A., Southern California, and like he would come in like every Saturday and do a presentation on the brain and alcohol and kind of how it reacts in the body and things. And I was just amazed at like the croc brain and like, you know, what alcohol does to the body. I kept drinking for quite a number of years after that. So, what did you do when you realized, hey, I need to get sober? What are some of the things that you did? Because I noticed one of the comments that you can't do it alone, right?
Right.
That you realized that you were powerless to quit alone.
I tried. I literally, before this incident that happened with the kid, I probably tried to quit 50 or 100 times.
Right.
Literally over, and I'd go a day or two and then I'd have a beer. Mm-hmm. And then I'd go a day or two and then I'd have two or three beers and then I'd be right back where I was. And it was this public shaming that did it for me. Mm-hmm. And that awareness. And then one of my very best friends was a sober alcoholic. And he urged me to go to AA and I didn't for a long time. And I just did it. I white knuckled it.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I walked into AA and found a whole bunch of friends that had the same problem I had.
Mm.
It's been a great journey.
Yeah. And I love at the very end of the book, you said we just call it grace and we are humbly grateful. You know, it is an amazing gift that we're given that of sobriety. But with it, and I think this is why we're having a coffee this morning, with it comes a bit of a responsibility. I mean, I've learned that I don't have the answer to becoming sober, but every day I learn more about my journey, my personal journey that's brought me to 5 years of sobriety. It's possible for that to happen. Excuse me. And that's the message I try and convey.
Absolutely.
So, doctors, we talk about how the body processes alcohol. The highest number that I, because I've been in a number of hospitalizations, the highest number I got was 0.46.
Wow.
And that's almost dead.
I that same night I had a neurosurgeon in red scrubs, and I remember it was like 2 or 3 in the morning. He came in. He said, Glenn, he said, you have a brain bleed. Mm-hmm. He says, we aren't going to be able to fix it. You know, there's nothing we can do. He said, you probably won't last through the night. And I was like, I was drunk. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. I knew I was going to die from alcohol at that point. I just knew it. I just didn't know how. And I just laid back and I accepted. I'm like, here it is.
Right.
You know, then I woke up and, here I am.
Yeah, right.
But it decimates the body. But I think, I'm almost 9 years away from it now. The body can heal, for the most part, can heal a lot of itself, right?
Right, absolutely, and does incredibly. The body is so resilient, it's amazing, but there are certain things that it can't do. It can't fix a liver that's cirrhotic,
mm-hmm.
because with a liver, you kill liver cells, and they're all hooked up in little channels.
Mm-hmm.
When they die, the channels get fibrotic, they get scarred, and so you can't grow new cells in those channels because it's all scar tissue. And that's what cirrhosis means, scarring.
Okay.
And that's why, and then everything is hooked up backwards. And then that's why people get yellow. And that's a very serious problem. And it's really interesting because I've had a couple cases in the last year or two where people have actually had liver transplants, right. Which just absolutely boggles my mind for cirrhosis.
Yeah, we've been surrounded by that same thing in the rooms that we do. What I guess, and again, see how what I'm saying, almost a half hour has almost gone by. Here's what doesn't scar and heal and get better is death. The book the book is peppered with stories of people who didn't make it. Right?
Right.
There was a lot of is peppered with stories of people that did make it but had long-term effects of alcohol consumption. What's the purpose of the book, and what would you like somebody who's your ideal reader of the book, I guess, is my first question. Who would you like to pick up a copy of The Sobering Truth and have it make an impact? Tell me the perfect demographic for you of somebody you'd like to see pick up this book.
Well, it's exactly like what I was, Mike. A HFA, a high-functioning alcoholic, somebody who drinks pretty much every day and does it socially, and every now and then steps over a line and gets sloppy. But what I want them to realize is what they're doing to their body and what they're doing to their family, what they're doing to their kids when they get angry because they've had too much to drink and, you know, the psychosocial aspects as well as the physical aspects.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I think it does a great job. There's going to be a link in our resource room for people to get the book. I think, again, it's a 300-page plus read. Really well done. It really opened my eyes to the health effects of drinking and then also the terminal effects of drinking. I mean, for Pete's sake, the fact that you're here today is remarkable because you flipped a car when you were early on in your journey. And and because you had seatbelts on, you know, you're here to have this conversation with us today.
Well, and I think I had this little angel that, you know, saw me through all that stuff.
I love it.
That knew I had a bigger role in life, and I just
bigger purpose.
And you do. You have a good purpose. Thank you for sharing all this awesome knowledge in here. We're going to put it up on our resource room, and maybe someday we'll come have you come back and tell you some success stories from people who have read the book and changed their lifestyle.
That would be great.
Sounds great,
that
Jeff.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Jeff, very nice to meet you. Thanks for jumping in the coffee shop with us.
Have a great day, man.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
Thanks for joining us for today's coffee chat. To contact the show, email us at podcast@sober.coffee. If you need immediate help, the AA hotline is 800-839-1686. The National Suicide Prevention hotline is 800-273-8255. Remember, Mike and Glenn are sharing their own journey on the path to recovery. Any suggestions, medical or otherwise, are their own experiences and should not be viewed as professional advice. See you next week, and remember, there is a solution.
Stay safe in the city of Chicago.